What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to Do You Believe in Magic? I hope you do. Make sure to follow us at DYBNMagic and follow our site, OrlandoPinstripedPost.com. What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to our seventh episode of Do You Believe in Magic? I'm your host, Preston Else, and today we are talking to the founder and the former editor of Orlando Pinstripe Post, Evan Dunlap. What's up, Evan?
What's going on, man? Good to be here.
Yeah, man, you've been following the team since, I want to say, 2009, or is that just when you became credentialed?
That's when I got the credentials. I started the site in the back half of the 06-07 season. So the last 30 or so games of Brian Hill's second tenure as coach. And then that summer was when the Magic signed Rashard Lewis and brought Stan Van Gundy aboard, and everything kind of turned around. So I've been paying attention to the team for a little bit now.
Yeah, 2009 is a very good year to become credentialed. You guys make sure to follow Evan at BQR Magic. All right, before we go anywhere, if you are listening now, thank you guys, first of all. There's not many of you yet, but we're glad you're here. Please do us one more favor and retweet, subscribe to the pod on iTunes, and rate us right now before you do anything else. All right, let's go back to Evan. Evan, let's get rolling. The Magic have finally achieved the worst record in the NBA, so kudos to them. After the Hawks defeated the Nuggets on Wednesday, the Magic sit at 12-31, half a game behind the Hawks, and a full game behind the Sacramento Kings, having sported 2 9-game losing streaks and currently find themselves losers of 7 in a row right now, with their last victory coming in 2017 against the Pistons. They're losing to the Wolves right now, although it is tight, and then they've got games against other really good opponents. I can't remember specifically. I remember the Cavaliers are one of them, and there's another tough opponent. So odds are they're probably going to go somewhere around a 9 or 10-game losing streak here. Evan, how much farther can the Magic fall?
To quote Lindsay Lohan, the limit does not exist, man. I don't know if there's light at the end of that tunnel. I mean, I was looking at some of this earlier. They started 8-4. They've lost 4 of their last 31 games since then. That's a 129 win percentage. Good. If over an 82-game season, that'd be 10.5 wins. I mean, this is just an extremely bad basketball team. As it's been for some time, although perhaps not quite this bad, this sort of prolonged stretch, like 31 games is not an insignificant part of the season. So I don't see the light at the end of that tunnel. It's just bad all around. In that span, 31 games, of which they've won 4, 29th in offense, 30th in defense, 30th in point differential, 29th in rebounding. It's just blood everywhere, just blood. it's fun. We can laugh about it, but I would like the Magic to be good again. It's been a while since they've been a watchable, sort of relevant team. But getting back to your question, I don't see the light at the end of this tunnel. It's going to be a rough final half of the season for the Pinstripe Boys.
No, and I don't blame you. It's easy to be negative right now. But as it stands, the Magic at halftime are locked in a close one with the Wolves. 48-47, they trail by 1. But then upcoming, they've got the Cavs, and then they've got the Celtics before getting the Kings on Tuesday. So certainly an opportunity to lose 10 in a row there if they can't win this one tonight. All right, so let's move on. We talked about how negative things are. Let's talk a little bit about Frank Vogel and where he sees the future of this franchise at this point. He's already pumped the brakes on any playoff aspirations as the Magic trail the 8th-seeded Heat by 10.5 games. He recently said this week, "This season is now focused on development. This is a part of our mission this year," Vogel said. "We want to make a playoff push and get this franchise back in the playoffs where our fans want to see us. But to do that, our young players have to improve and develop, whether it's Aaron Gordon's three-point shooting or Mario Hezonja getting comfortable or Elfrid Payton shooting 52% from the field is impressive. Our young players are improving. It's a silver lining with our record. These things tend to lead to wings and lead to building a winning culture. However, Evan, two of the names he mentioned are free agents entering this offseason with Peyton being restricted. Do we really need to worry about developing anyone on this roster not named Aaron Gordon right now?
I wouldn't think so. I'm curious. I'm much more curious about Hezonja's situation than Peyton. Hezonja is not setting the world on fire, but he is producing. And he seems to be more comfortable now that Frank Vogel has sort of identified him as a kind of a small ball four, offensively and defensively. I know he's going to be unrestricted, right?
Yes. They declined his qualifying offer, so they made him an unrestricted free agent, which I'm assuming that they're regretting at this point. What'd you think?
Maybe, but I mean, hindsight being 2020 and all that, but based on his first 3 years, probably fair to say they made the right call in declining that option. But I like Hezonja a little bit more than Peyton. I think Peyton is kind of I know he's only in his fourth year, but he seems to be a known quantity at this point, which is to say sort of a mid-tier backup. I don't think he can start in this league. I don't know very many teams that can thrive with a non-shooting point guard the way the game is played today. But I think as a change of pace sort of backup, he can excel. So I'm not terribly interested in what Elfrid Payton does the rest of the way. But Hezonja, sure. Yeah, I think it behooves the Magic to see. I mean, he's still under their control for the next few games or the end of the season, and maybe they do want to consider bringing him back. Whether he'd be interested is, of course, another question entirely. But I think letting him go out there and continue to get reps in this role that he seems suited for behooves the Magic, and that's what I'm interested to see. And, of course, Aaron Gordon, you need to know what you've got there.
Let me ask you this. This is something I've asked Aaron and Will and Zach on previous podcasts. Elfrid Payton, people forget, or maybe they want to forget, that he's just 23 years old, and it takes point guards a long time to figure things out in this league, especially guys who don't come out of college as knockdown shooters. And of course, you got Mario Hezonja over there at 22, who pretty much everybody in the NBA had written off prior to the season. Of course, now he's playing a bit better. He's not setting the world on fire. I've got his numbers below, but we're going to talk about that in depth a little bit later. But just talking about overall about where the Magic stand, the idea right now is to sell, and just bottom out and start the rebuilding train all over again. But regardless of what action they take in the next 3 weeks, they're going to finish in the bottom five. They're going to be in the highest point of the lottery. They started the season 8-4. Is there any inkling in the back of your brain, Evan, like, let's let these guys continue to develop, bring everybody back, bring in, you know, a Luka Doncic, I can't even pronounce his name, or Marvin Bagley, just run this thing back? And I mean, they're going to get pennies for the dollar on these guys anyway. Why not just go into the offseason and see if there's a potential chance you might be able to get a steal of a contract on these guys? Is there any thought like that in your head right now?
I mean, sure. If you could get Peyton back, of course, we don't know how the rest of the season is going to play out, but if he continues this sort of replacement level or sub-replacement level play, then I don't think he's worth keeping around. But at the right price, sure. As long as you've clearly identified him as a backup, and you at that point you entered the draft in free agency looking for a starter. So I know, even if you acknowledge that it does take point guards longer to develop. I think the classic example, I guess, is Chauncey Billups, who bounced around and around and around until he landed in Detroit and became a Finals MVP. I mean, that's the exception and not the rule. I'm not sold on Peyton. And I know he's a kind of a punching bag for Magic fans, and that's, you know, not entirely fair. I'm sure he works very hard, and he's a good player, but I don't see him as like as a guy you can make the playoffs with if he's your starter playing 35 minutes a game.
You know what, Evan, I gotta take a quick break. Not a break, but just a break from the questioning to let you know there's some breaking news taking place right now. Of course, I mentioned that it's 48-47 at the break, but there is right now currently, excuse me, a fight taking place in the Amway Center. Magic's Aaron Aflalo throws a haymaker at Bielisa as mayhem breaks out in Orlando. I'm sure you didn't expect that, did you?
No. I don't know who I would have at the top of my most likely to throw a punch on the Magic power ranking list, but I don't think a Flalo would be in the top three there. But I wouldn't have him near. I would have him near the top of the Magic guys you don't want to mess with list. But yeah, a Flalo B elites is kind of a strange undercard.
We will definitely have more on this news as it develops. I'm sure by the time you guys listen to the pod, you'll know the whole story by then anyway. All right, let's dive in and talk trades. That's what everybody wants to hear. Jeff Weltman told Josh Robbins a few weeks ago the teams are certainly interested in what the Magic have to sell. And most recently, Mark Stein, now of the New York Times, having been relieved from ESPN, said it might go down as one of the greatest unsolved mysteries of our time. Now, this, of course, is being facetious, sarcasm at its best. How did this Magic team start 8-4? Orlando has since gone a ghastly 4-27, which will most likely lead to a fire sale at next month's trade deadline. Rival executives expect Jeff Weltman, Orlando's new team president, to aggressively hunt for new homes for the likes of Fournier, Payton, and Hezonja, given that Nikola Vucevic's broken finger is likely to preclude dealing the center. The countdown's on, Evan. We're 23 days away as it sits right now here on Tuesday night. Took me a second to figure that out. When do you think the rumor mill will really begin to start cooking?
Well, it never really stops in this league. It's a 365-day league anymore. But in terms of really picking up, I think as you get closer, probably a week or so out, sometimes those deals happen a little earlier than the deadline itself. But it really sort of reaches a kind of a fever pitch, I think, in the final day or two leading up to the deadline. That's what I would expect the most chatter or buzz.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of targets to talk about. I think it was about two seasons ago when the trade deadline just lit the entire NBA on fire, had so many trades. I think it was a record at that point. I can't remember specifically. I want to say it was 2 years ago. But let's start with the targets. And, of course, Evan Fournier is the one on the tips of everybody's tongues. He's the one we hear the most about. He's 25. He's averaging 17.6 points, 3.3 rebounds, while shooting 45.9% from the field and 38.9% from three. He's had two astounding months where he shot over 50 and 40 respectively. I want to say those were October and December. Of course, he's been quiet recently with Vucevic out of the lineup. He's got 2 years, $34 million. He's got a third year, which is a player option, for another $17 million, which that have to think he's probably going to exercise at this point, though you never know. It's 3 years away. Most recently, the conversation was the Pistons had engaged in talks with the Magic for a combination of Reggie Jackson plus a young shooter and Luke Kennard. And then we've got some other possibilities like Alec Burks. Of course, Fournier has connections in Utah. He vacationed there this past offseason, and he was teammates to Rudy Gobert in the World Cup and Eurobasket, and he's got connections to, I'm going to do my best with this, former Magic assistant Igor Kokoskov. I don't know. I'm not going to try any further. Evan, what do you think is the highest potential payback the Magic can get for Evan Fournier, and how desperate do you think they actually are to deal him? Do you think there's any chance they keep him beyond the deadline on February 8th?
No, I would say, if it were me running the team, I would be more inclined to keep him. Of course, you listen to offers, but 17 a year for a starting caliber wing, albeit one who is not the not the greatest defender. I think that's fair. And as you mentioned, he's a good match with Vucevic. The two have played together for a while. They know each other. They're good friends. So, and it translates into production on the court. So of course it makes sense that he's struggling a bit with Vucevic out. I don't see a pressing need to trade him. I don't think he's untouchable either. I think you listen to offers certainly, and if you can get a a league average starter on a fair deal, starting point guard, I should say, like Reggie Jackson in that example you mentioned. That's something you consider, but I'm not, chomping at the bit to run him out of town. I think he's a talented player, and kind of fits pretty well with the way Coach Vogel wants to play. I think he's a good he's always a good shooter, but he's developed more of as a playmaker off the dribble, mostly for himself. But I think those are valuable skills, not irreplaceable skills, but good ones. And as I said, I'm not eager. I don't see the eagerness to trade him. I don't quite understand that.
Yeah, 25 years old, and of course he's been off lately, but he confessed himself that he plays a lot better with Vucevic. They have great chemistry, and certainly waiting for him to get back healthy, which should be in about the next 3 to 4 weeks, we're all hoping. It was diagnosed originally as a 6 to 8 week injury, and it's been 3 weeks now, so hopefully he's on the right timetable to getting back and bringing the best out of Evan Fournier. And I agree with you. I'm not desperate to deal him, but like you said, if there's something on the table other than Reggie Jackson, then I'd certainly be inclined to listen. Let's continue down the path here to Tradesville. We've got Elfrid Payton up next, the former number 10 overall pick in the 14 draft. He's 23, like we mentioned, averaging 12.9 and 6.6 assists per game. And 38.6 from three this year is easily a career high, though he only attempts about 1.5 of those a game. He'll also be restricted, so the Magic, of course, can match anything that's offered to him, and they'll have probably, I think, a 3-day window. It still is. I thought there was a talk during the collective bargaining agreement about shortening that stay, but I think it's still 3 days. But so that could potentially make him a target for teams in this offseason, and it would be difficult. You'd have to think for the Magic to match, given their salary constraints right now and the need to re-sign Aaron Gordon going into the summer. So what are your thoughts on Elfrid Payton? Do you want to see him go? And if so, what would you hope to get back for him?
Well, I wouldn't say I want to see him go, but I also don't think he's really a fit. I mean, we mentioned earlier, it does take a while for point guards to develop. I don't get the sense that the raw tools are there for him to become a top level player. Like I said, I think he's kind of just his sort of peak would be sort of a mid tier change of pace kind of spark plug guard. But it's very hard anymore in this league to really excel as a lead guard if you can't shoot the three. And sure, he's improved his percentage this year, but that needs to be a volume thing as well as a percentage thing that he has to sustain over time before defenses really start to respect that. So I'm much more open to dealing him than I am to Fournier. And of course you run the risk of you trade him and then he breaks out with his new team. That's the risk in with any player. But I just anymore, I don't know that there's much room in the league for non-shooting point guards. As far as a return, if you can get a first-round pick, of course you're not getting a lottery pick, but if you can get in the first round, I think that's – you just kind of cut your losses at that point. And in terms of any particular player, I don't have anyone in mind. But if you can just get a young backup, just one of those deals where guys who are not in the greatest of situations trade places and maybe make the most of their new homes. Maybe there's a similar player on another team with a similar contract that would make sense for what Jeff Weltman and John Hammond want to do going forward.
Yeah, I definitely think this is a scenario where you're probably not going to get a first-round pick, even a second-round pick, if you don't anticipate offering Elfrid Payton probably what he's going to desire this summer. He might desire somewhere to the tune of $10 million per year, but I don't think anybody's going to pony that up. But it might be a nice experiment for a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who's seen extended time loss to their starting point guard, D'Angelo Russell, to give up a second-round pick, take a flyer on a guy, see if they can bring him back in the offseason. But I wouldn't imagine the bidding would be anywhere more than $8 million per year, somewhere over 3 or 4 years. Of course, he's developing and somebody's going to want to give him that opportunity. But we've seen it again and again. Teams are becoming more and more hesitant to give long-term contracts. If anything, more teams are going further towards giving more money up front and keeping the contracts a bit shorter term. So we might see something like that from Elfrid Payton, somewhere to the tune of, I don't know, like a 2-year, $20 million deal or $24 million deal to a team who's desperate for point guard help, but is also looking to the future and potentially looking to a date and time where you know, there's a bevy of free agents available on the market. We see how teams, you know, unload their rosters for situations like that, like this summer with Paul George and LeBron James, among others. Let's move on. Let's talk now about Mario Hezonja. He's the third name listed by Mark Stein. And of course, everybody knows number 5 overall pick, thought to be a bust going into the summer. He was drafted in 2015 and has done pretty much nothing. But this year, he's only averaging just 6.8 points in 17 minutes, shooting 33% from the field. But since joining the rotation due to all these injuries, he's actually averaging 11.8 points per game and shooting 48% from the floor and 34% from the arc. So he's getting better and better, and we're seeing him start to improve with an expanded role. I don't know how much better he's going to get, but what do you think the Magic could potentially get in exchange for him? Do you think he's just a player that you potentially, add in to relieve yourself of some salary cap fodder, like somebody like a DJ Augustin? Or do you think you just unload him into cap space for, like, I don't know, a lightly protected second round pick at this point?
I think the second is too low. I mean, I don't want to overstate the guy because he does have 3 sort of years and this current year, which is better than but I like the way that Vogel has used him. I don't think Hezonja was ever going to really excel as a wing due to his just lack of foot speed. It's just tough for him to keep up with guys defensively. So I do like him as more of a small ball four who can spread the floor a little bit and then attack closeout. I think it's valuable. You can't build a team around that. I think he's probably like a, you know, ideally like a 7th or 8th or 9th man. But as you said, he's also young and could develop into something even greater. So a second round pick to me is too low. But, you know, you take what you can get. I don't know if he's, it's kind of a tough spot because he's certainly not the sort of caliber of player who teams would say, you know, we like this guy so much, we're willing to take on Bismack Biyombo's contract or DJ Augustin's contract in order to get him, especially knowing that he's going to be a free agent. So it's tough for me to see where like a one-for-one sort of swap with Hezonja works. He's got to be part of a larger package, I would think, if he's dealt at all.
Yeah, I would definitely think the best scenario to getting a first-round pick for Mario Hezonja obviously wouldn't be him on his own right, but packaging Wesley Iwundu with one of these guys, with a Shelvin Mack or a DJ Augustin or Mario Hezonja, his low contract and draft-type numbers going up for the next, I think, 3 years. He's potentially on a 3-year contract, and he has played well above his station this season so far. I think somebody would take a chance on taking on the contract of like a Shelvin Mack or a DJ Augustin or a Mario Hezonja with a Wesley Iwundu and potentially give a first round pick or some kind of rotational piece, whatever the Magic prefer. How do you think Wesley Iwundu is that valuable at this point?
I wouldn't go that far. I know he plays hard and he defends, which is something that coaches and front offices value a great deal. But you still got to look at what he produces, and it's something in the neighborhood of like 4 points and 2 rebounds and 17 minutes, you know, something like that. Just, I don't know what he does that really is going to affect winning and losing. But like I said, the willingness to defend and the fearlessness that he's displayed, those are, you can work with those. I don't know that teams are, again, I don't know that teams are looking at this admittedly small body of work and saying, oh man, you know, we gotta go out and get this guy. He might be worth the first. I think that might be overstating it a bit.
All right. Well, as we mentioned earlier, the Magic are clearly destined to be a top five lottery team at this point in time. And some of the names mentioned are Luka Doncic, as I said earlier, Dondre Ayton, and Marvin Bagley. Is obviously you mentioned point guards, and of course, there's the guy from Alabama. Is there anyone specifically that you're really excited to watch in this college season upcoming as a potential future Orlando Magic lottery pick?
So I gotta punt on this question only because I have never watched or particularly enjoyed college basketball. It seems like a chore to me. I know it. A lot of people really love it, but nothing against them. But to me, watching it is just kind of a chore. It sort of barely registers as the same sport just because of the. I think the biggest thing is that kills me is that 40-second shot clock. That's very silly. So I gotta, you know, even when the Magic were good and we were looking at, you know, I was trying to do draft prep for when they're picking in the 20s, it still was kind of one of my least favorite parts of the job of running a site. And that I wish I had paid more attention, at least, put in the reps. So watching the game, the college game, to sort of see what I could see there, because then Dwight Howard got traded and the Magic became very bad very quickly. And suddenly I needed to have informed opinions on guys like Victor Oladipo and Trey Burke and all this. And I wasn't prepared, and that's kind of my own bad. So I just, like I always do, I just have to kind of rely on the experts, your Jonathan Givenees, he's the premier name, but the whole Draft Express team, CBS Sports, all those guys. I just kind of got to follow their lead, watch their scouting reports, and see what I can see there, because, man, college basketball is really rough. It's so bad. I'm sorry.
I'm totally on board with you. I've never been into it. Of course, there's the excitement of the March Madness and the any given day, anything can happen. A 16 seed can potentially bounce a 1 seed. We've seen it all done before, and it's very exciting. It's fun to do a pool with your coworkers and with your family members. The name that comes to mind that I enjoy watching, and like you, I don't watch a lot of college basketball. There's simply not enough time to watch all the NBA games and then go down and watch the Pee Wee League, so to speak. I'm sorry to all the diehard college fans. I'm sure a lot of the guys listening enjoy the purity of the game so much more than the NBA. If anything, every time you watch a college game, these guys are giving it 100%. From minute one to minute 48, these guys are giving everything that they've got. And you can't necessarily say that about the Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New Orleans Pelicans. So there is that element of intensity that can really captivate an audience. But like I was mentioning, of course you got Luka Doncic, doesn't play in college right now, but he's the guy that everybody's talking about, a guy who could potentially be a fit at the three for the Magic going forward. Although he is 6'6", he's a bit undersized, but he can do so many things. He's so electric. But the guy who a lot of people are starting to talk about is Trae Young, and that's just because he's setting college basketball on fire right now, 30 points and 10 assists in just 16 games. He's 6'2", and he's shooting 41% from three on the year. So he kind of seems like he's that version of Elfrid Payton that we all were hoping we're going to get. Of course, it's a different ball game once you get to the NBA and once the guys are bigger, longer, faster. So we'll see what happens. Of course, it's a bit too early to be talking about that right now, but glad that I got that perspective from you. I'll lean off on those questions until we get to April, and then I definitely will need an opinion from you. Let's wrap up with a quote that Marcin Gortat had, and of course he played for the Magic from 2008 to 2011. He had 11 points and 12 rebounds in 27 minutes against the team last week in that thrilling, I want to say it was 125 to 117. It was a pretty great game between the Magic and the Wizards. Right now he's averaging 9.1 points, 8.1 rebounds, and 2 assists per game. He's got one more year in his contract at $13.6 million. So it is a hefty sum to bring him back just as cordiality, I guess we should say. His quote, though, was specifically, "I would love to join the team for maybe 2 or 3 months or maybe half a season at least," Gortat told the Orlando Sentinel after the game that I just mentioned. "I'm not going to be an old guy, so I don't I am going to be an old guy. So I don't know if Orlando would be interested or not, but I would love to join the team back again just to wear the uniform, put the white and blue stripes again on me, and be able to say I'm a Magic again and just come back home where I belong. That would definitely be a dream come true to do that for me. Whatever the team wants to do, play me, just be in the rotation or just be a bench player, I would definitely be there for the team. This is a guy who's traded in December of 2010 to the Phoenix Suns before becoming a Wizard that next following offseason. Evan, if he wants to be in Orlando so badly, why did they ever trade him in the first place? I mean, obviously, I know the answer to that. The Dwight Howard, you couldn't have two great centers on the same team, especially when one was getting to be a bit too expensive. But, I mean, this guy seems to really be excited about being an Orlando Magic player, don't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was a very late second-round pick who stayed overseas and then came over into everyone's surprise, probably even the Magic's. He developed into a very good center, probably starting caliber. I think, you know, had Dwight Howard been injured for any length of time, of course you take a MVP-level Dwight Howard and replace him with Marcin Gortat. It's not going to be the same result, but he would have acquitted himself well, and he did well for himself in Phoenix, too, and in Washington. So there's you know, everyone kind of laughed when the Magic matched that offer sheet that he signed with Dallas. I hate to say I told you so, but he is that good, or you know, he was 8 years ago. If he wants to finish his career in Orlando, I don't see why not. I could imagine him maybe fulfilling that Aaron Aflalo or Maurice Spate sort of veteran mentor role. Although I think it, in some ways it'd be more impactful because I think Gortat would still be able to play rotation level minutes and be a net positive on the floor. You know, Frank Vogel has talked about this recently regarding Spate, that he has a great spirit and he's kind of a winner. He wants to lift his teammates up. And that's, of course, it's a valuable, I don't want to call it a skill, but let's use the word skill. But I think it only means so much if the person providing it is kind of a bit player. I think you need that level of leadership and excitement and investment from your top players. And that's not to say that Gortat would come here and be a top player, because then the Magic would be in a heap of trouble. But if he would still be, I think, a contributor. I think that's worth something if he's willing to come to Orlando on the cheap. He wants to be here and he understands his role. And I think that'd be a boon for Orlando because he can still play a little bit.
Yeah, you'd have to think if Vucevic is still on the roster come next year, he'll be an expiring contract, and it'll be pretty valuable for anybody looking for cap space. But should the Magic find themselves stuck with Vucevic and both sides, parties want to move on, so to speak, a pretty even swap could take place there, although the likeliest of possibilities is at that point in the season where his contract, Gortat's, I'm speaking of, will be, I think, two-thirds paid off by the time they get to the trade line. A buyout could be a very good possibility, just finish the remaining 2 months with the Orlando Magic at that point. So something we could see down the line and potentially a feel-good story. But for now, I should let you guys know that after achieving a double technical, I'm talking about Aaron Aflalo and Bielitsa in tonight's game. It's a very tight one. I hope you guys are watching 66-65 right now in the third. After achieving a double technical a bit earlier in the contest, in the second quarter, Aflalo threw a haymaker, and then Bielitsa put him in a headlock, and DJ Augustin tried to pry Aflalo out of the headlock. Nasty stuff, but both guys were, of course, ejected, and we can probably assume they'll be suspended for some given point of time. A couple of games, I'd have to think. It was a nasty-looking throw. At least Aflalo should get a couple of games, I think, for that punch. But for now, you guys, thank you so much for your time, Evan. Again, you guys can find the work of the founder of Orlando Pinstripe Post at said website and follow him at BQR Magic. I'm Preston Ells. Follow me at Preston Ells. Since you guys are still here, do us one more favor. You know, retweet, subscribe on iTunes, and tell your friends. This is only our 7th episode. We definitely need your help, and we appreciate it so much. Evan, do you have anything to plug, sir?
I don't. I do want to say I didn't get a chance to say it earlier, but it's super cool that you guys are you're doing a podcast here. Eddie Rivera and I tried to start one back in 2009 or 2010. It just never got off the ground for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was just horrible audio quality. And I believe the files and the posts that they were, those podcasts were in, have been deleted. They're in the, you know, they're in the cloud somewhere, maybe. I don't know how any of that works. But so thank you for having me, but also thank you more broadly for starting this podcast, Preston. This is cool to see. I didn't know when I started the site that there would ever be a podcast component to it, and it's cool to see it's coming together. So thank you.
Of course, dude. And we'll have you back anytime you ever want. Just reach out to me. Right now, I've just got a bullpen of you and Zach and Aaron and Will. But this is also an invitation to anybody in the Orlando Magic community, any known writers for Orlando Magic Daily or Orlando Pinstripe Post, or anybody who wants to join these two teams, feel free. And you're all welcome on the podcast. I'm obviously very new at this. This is only my 7th episode. So I'm very grateful to guys like Evan and Zach and Aaron and Will for giving their time and providing us with their expertise on the Orlando Magic and a bit of the history going back to 2009, 2010, some of the brighter days of being a Magic fan. So it is super cool. And if you want, we can also have you back and just talk about some of those glory days and what you think the best climate of being an Orlando Magic fan has ever been. Of course, it would have to be either that year or the Nick Anderson, Shaquille O'Neal, Penny Hardaway year. So it might be a nice debate. But for now, thanks for listening, dude. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Of course, this is Do You Believe in Magic? And we hope you do. We'll talk to you guys later.